Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham, Talk Radio.
And I'm delighted to say that joining me this morning for the first of many very regular occurrences, Mr. Richard Tice is here. Very nice to see you, Richard.
Great to be here in this studio. And I'm also the very happy recipient of the wonderful makeup.
The makeup department.
Your makeup team. This is almost like a competition.
Mike. I know.
You know, who do people think is looking better?
No, trust me, it's not a competition. You've already lost. I've been down there for many, many times this week and it's been tremendous. They're spending more money on my makeup than they are actually on paying me. Well, this is why it looks.
Maybe
the way
you should take the hint.
Well, listen. But the funny thing is, though, is you get so used to then looking in the mirror and seeing yourself about 20 years younger.
Yeah.
You don't want to take it off, do you?
I know.
I went to the pub yesterday afternoon. It was still on, and people actually are now so used to seeing me like this, they don't realise I'm wearing any makeup.
Did they think if you had Botox or something?
Well, they haven't said that, but it's almost the same thing, isn't it?
Maybe that's the chat. Maybe some of the viewers are now, really quite.
Has
concerned
he had
about
Botox? It. Well, I'm not sure. It's not filling I need, really, is it? I mean, it's more like taking out. I mean, yeah. James Max was down there yesterday. He says, "Did you do liposuction?" But anyway, welcome. You're going to be here with us for quite a considerable period
that's
of time.
That's right. No, that's fantastic.
We've got lots of great plans and sort of regular features that we're going to do. But let's kick off, first of all, with the football, because obviously that's not, even if you're not into football, and I know not everybody is, this ridiculous kind of taking the knee thing has now taken on such mammoth proportions because they've become so intransigent. I think this weekend is going to be dominated simply by that one thing.
It's going to be absolutely fascinating. And so many national teams have said, of course, they're not taking the knee.
Right.
For obvious reasons, the most important of which is, look, racism is vile. We all condemn it.
Right.
We all absolutely hate it. But it is completely the wrong symbol and thing to do, because what you should be doing, rather than taking the knee in a subservient way, is actually standing tall and proud against racism. So firstly, it's the wrong thing. But the idea, I mean, the image that we all have to think about are a bunch of England players taking the knee in front of the strong, tall, proud Scots right opposite them,
right,
standing tall, literally laughing in their faces, thinking, "You English are subservient to us Scots."
And
it's not a great way to start a
competitive
football
match. With a backdrop of England's very own fans booing them.
I mean,
Southgate is a complete and utter absolute idiot if he thinks this is a good idea.
I think mentally it'll have a real negative impact on the English players. And, bluntly, if England lose to Scotland in that game, then that could well be one of the reasons. And, you've got the same with Croatia. They're not taking the knee.
Also, rather ironic, isn't it, that England are playing Croatia first, right? Croatia, not famously known for their liberalism when it comes to, people from ethnic minorities. I mean, these are the same people, when England went to play in Zagreb, I think, were throwing bananas at the England players, as recently as about 2 or 3 years ago.
Absolutely. And, that's appalling, and we should always continue to condemn it. But I just think this is, without question, I think it is going to have an impact on the English players. And look, time will tell. Obviously, I'm English. I want the English team to do fantastically, to go all the way. But I do worry. And the idea of feeling sort of inferior and negative in the face of the Scottish players after a mere 25 years in an international competition. I mean,
right.
I know you've been waiting a long time, Mike. I mean, you're properly excited by this.
Well, listen, I have the great ability to switch my allegiance at any moment, being born in London, having Scottish parents. As soon as Scotland get knocked out, which inevitably they do, and the great thing about Scotland fans is they expect to be knocked out. It's not like they expect to win anything. I mean, not since, I think, 1978 have they ever actually thought they were going to win anything.
Yeah, you're fully flexible, but as president of the Independent Republic, of course, you can do that.
Yes, I can jump horses in midstream, absolutely no problem at all. But I'll tell you what's also interesting is Sadiq Khan and others saying to the Scottish fans, don't come to London. I mean, it's literally like waving a red rag at a bull. And I mean, they're going to come down in their thousands. And guess what? They're going to go into Trafalgar Square, they're going to get drunk, they're going to have a great time, and they're probably going to get into a row with the police.
And let's hope they don't. But in reality, it sounds like great fun. We might have to go and join them.
Well, we might. I mean, I remember back in whenever it was that they knocked over the goalposts at Wembley, my parents and my sister went into Piccadilly Circus. I was too young, so they left me at home. and they came back with some grass from Wembley.
And some said, of the Wembley turf.
Because they were all sort of marauding around the centre of London. And it was like a big party for anybody who was Scottish, or even if you weren't Scottish. And it was just a great time.
Well, anything Scots, they were probably trading in turf and then, you know, digging probably. Up people's gardens.
I knew
pretending
a, guy
it was Wembley turf.
A guy in Glasgow who still had a piece of turf. He said, that's it in his garden. He said, I took that from Wembley. it's tremendous. But, you know, isn't it ludicrous that here we have these po-faced, you know, serious-minded, so-called kind of thinking football people who clearly have just got this so wrong that they now can't escape. They can't get out.
They're completely out of touch with the reality of how millions of people up and down the country are thinking. We want to focus on the quality of our team, the quality of the whole tournament, the prospects of us winning or not. Instead, it's all being hijacked by this, you know, these woke wallies who just, you know, sort of using this to their own ends. I always sort of think about focusing on the money, and I'm trying to, you know, some of these people in this woke brigade, of course, they're actually making a huge amount of money out of all of this nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear from the way that many fans have reacted that just we just don't want it.
No. And it's got nothing to do with people being racist or, you know, not liking the fact that they're standing up. Because they're not standing up to racism. I mean, you know, young men who've got four or five Lamborghinis and a couple of Bentleys in the mansion, you know, talking and preaching about equality. Really? And the question that nobody's asked Gareth Southgate is, what happens if somebody who wants to play for England says, I don't want to do it? Do you not pick them for the team?
Well, exactly. And that is, in a sense, all the players have to do it. Because otherwise they know that Southgate, who is, you know, one of the leading lights of the woke brigade, he won't pick them. And so essentially their freedom of choice is being curtailed. And that's a terrible thing. It's the wrong signal. It's the wrong motif, the wrong way of standing against racism. And they've just got it completely wrong. They need to relook at it. Because they've gone so far down this rabbit hole, I fear they're not going to be able to dig themselves out of it.
You know, I said this at the beginning of the week. If he'd been sensible, Southgate, he should have said, look, we've made our point. We're happy that as we enter the tournament, you know, the boys have decided that, you know, yes, we are still against racism and we want to highlight the fact that, you know, it must be eradicated. So we're now going to do something slightly differently. Yep. And everyone would be fine with that. And,
but,
you know,
but,
if they were linking arms or something.
I think they've got themselves in a position where no one will dare within the FA, within the management team, captain of the team, no one would dare say enough's enough. Actually, we've got to change this.
But this is
it'll
the thing.
Be too difficult.
I mean, the cricket world is the same. I mean, rugby in the Six Nations, England got slaughtered, right?
Yep.
Not least because they were taking the knee and their minds were not on the game.
Yep.
And they performed probably one of the worst Six Nations I think we've seen for many
years.
The England Cricket Board, the ECB, I watched a piece of footage of the team going out. They all had a slogan on their back saying, "We stand against sexism." I'm like, you're playing cricket. What's wrong with you?
It's madness. And, you know, you've just cited the evidence of the rugby team. The cricket team are not exactly excelling, are they? And they've got themselves in this rabbit hole of wokery. And I don't know how they're going to get out of it. It needs some courage. It needs some leadership. And we're not seeing any of that. And, you know, heaven forbid England do really badly in the group stage, you know, people will know what's the cause of it.
Yeah, absolutely right. Richard, we're going to take a small break here, but we're going to come back because we want to talk about the G7. We want to talk about the Boris love-in with Biden, who managed to arrive in Cornwall without falling down the stairs of the aeroplane, which was well done.
A good start.
Well done. Maybe we'll give him a CBE, but we shall see. We'll be back after this on Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Richard Tice is with me. Now, Richard, one of the things we'd like to do with you every week is we do Plank of the Week.
Yes,
why don't we do Deal of the Week?
Well,
you know,
exactly.
Because you're
so
a businessman. You are the sort of guy that I like to know because, you know, if I ever need any money, I'm going to come to you and go, you know, can you give me a bridging loan as long as it's not
obviously,
some way.
Obviously, to you, it'd be, you know, usurious, vast rates of interest.
Of course.
But I thought it'd be quite interesting, actually, to look at, and it can be a deal in anything, whether it's in business, whether it's, you know, shares or whether it's In politics, or anything. And indeed, you know, your listeners and your viewers, they might actually have come across something, you know, whether it's the most amazing deal to buy a fantastic champagne that's half price in whatever supermarket, they could put that in. I think we could have a bit of fun with it and say, look, this is the deal of the week.
Yes. Well, we're down in Cornwall and we were down there yesterday. We'll be down there again later on at the G7, which is just a real kind of just show-off fest of nonsense, isn't it? I mean, nothing's really going to be, even if they do agree on some kind of deal about anything,
I mean,
it's rubbish, isn't it?
The real winner actually is Cornwall because the money that must be pouring into Cornwall through all these leaders right. and all these huge entourages of people. You know, it must be good for the local economy.
They've got 6,000 police there, right? Do you know how many they normally have in that part of Cornwall?
Probably about two.
20.
20. Right?
They're all on a boat. They've moored them offshore on some kind of cruise ship. You know, it's a police cruise ship. It's like something out of Naked Gun.
It sort of feels a bit like the Davos summit yes. every year. And it's the great and the good, but what do they actually really achieve? And okay, so they've announced, obviously the extension and giving away billions of vaccines to developing right. countries.
But which nobody in this country really cares about, I'm sorry. I mean, unless you're some kind of virtue signalling Guardian reader, you're not going to go, oh, isn't it great? We're giving away all our vaccines all around the world.
You don't need a great summit down in Cornwall in the nicest possible way to make that hard, difficult negotiation. Yeah. That's certainly not the deal of the week. Mm. I think, and then you've got, the wives there. I mean, sort of take your wife to work.
Mrs.
all that
Johnson.
Nonsense. I mean, give us
a break.
He
does look a lot happier, though, since he got married, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
I mean, it's obviously worked out for him.
But fundamentally, I think actually the British people want to know what's his decision-making abilities and what decision is he going to make on Monday about easing the restrictions.
That's the real deal.
That's the real deal. Yeah. That's the big thing. That will be next deal's deal of the week or disaster of the week.
All of the mood music would suggest that they're sort of softening us up for not much of a restriction lifting.
Yeah, I think we're going to see fudge of the century on Monday, where he makes the nation feel grateful that certain other things have been eased, but then there will be that sort of continuing fear-mongering going on, where essentially there are still some restrictions, which makes it easier for them to bring in more restrictions later on in the year when they come up with whatever scariant or reason, or if there's an increase in flu. So I'm really concerned that they're just going to keep a sort of an umbrella of restrictions that
because you and I have talked about this, perpetuate the sense of fear. Exactly, because you and I have talked about the necessity for London to get back to normal, for cities to get their office workers back into proper 9-to-5 working or whatever it is they were doing. And they seem to be retreating from that idea.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. People don't know whether they're coming or going. And interestingly, I was actually at Lord's yesterday evening. It was great to see some people back there, albeit on a small number. But I was with met a young guy there. He'd been in his bedroom literally for a year. Yeah. He'd gone back to the office on May the 17th or 18th. He hadn't been able to work anywhere bar his bedroom. In a flat in Clapham, there were three of them in a three-bed flat. That is not good for people's mental health.
It really isn't.
So he wants to go back to the office 5 days a week, but he's not really allowed to by the company. They're sort of saying 3 days a week. Yeah. This is really important on young people's mental health, and it absolutely terrifies
me. In terms of commercial property, which you know a lot about, is there any... What's the position for a lot of these buildings? I mean, like the building that's just gone up over there.
Yeah,
What's happening?
The reality is that the office market in London, all over London, is going to have, from a valuation and rents perspective, is going to have a terrible time. But in a sense, no one's going to feel sorry for landlords.
No.
And arguably, rents coming down will be a good thing for the economy. Retail rents are going to go through the floor. So you could say, well, actually, to stimulate growth, that's all a good thing. And yeah, some people are going to, take some pain. But we need activity back in our city centres. And when you've got no travel, of course, you've got no people coming in, whether they're tourists, whether they're business people, then you're not going to have the activity in the hotels, in the centres. And it's quite clear this government, I mean, George Eustace confirmed it to Talk Radio just the other day, they're not really interested in opening up. It looks as though, we've got this great opportunity post-Brexit of being global Britain. And actually, this government, Boris's government, wants to turn us into little isolated island Britain.
Yeah.
For completely the wrong reason.
It's completely the opposite to what
madness.
Brexit was supposed
to be for. It's an utter lack of leadership, of courage, and a complete failure to take advantage of the vaccine success.
Yeah.
We're now being overtaken by countries all over Europe who are opening up their travel to tourists, to activity, and we're going to be floundering because we're worried about some variant of concern from some far-flung part of the world that we've never heard of, and it's this you start to wonder to what extent actually is this deliberate? Is it Big Pharma, who of course are making massive amounts of money? I nearly swore there. Because they are making huge sums of money by selling more and more vaccines to younger and younger people, including, heaven forbid, this idea of vaccinating children, and that's one of the next big battlegrounds. And then, of course, the testing companies, testing a million tests a week. With tests that...
I don't know what the point of that is. What's the point of testing people who haven't got anything wrong with them? What's
exactly.
The point?
What is the point of testing a million healthy people? The number of cases you're getting is way below the false positive rate. And you think, follow the money. And that's an expression that your listeners will continue to hear from me because, you know, I really think that actually it is the money which is wagging the tail on all
this. And, you know, we talk about travel, right? My daughter lives in Dubai. In the last week, she's been to Russia, Lebanon, and right now she's on a plane to New York. And I'm going... What's going on with me? Why can't I go anywhere? You know, she can't come here because she'd have to quarantine for 2 weeks. She doesn't want to come for 2 weeks. You know, the world's gone bonkers.
Well, actually, I think the UK leadership is going bonkers, whilst the rest of the world is actually
just
starting to get on with it.
But of course, if you're a diplomat or you're flying into Cornwall on a private jet,
there's no
COVID.
No, because there's a COVID shield free. Around you.
COVID shield.
It's clearly, you know, it's like a sort of COVID armour. It's like you know, the old warriors from a thousand years ago.
I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
You couldn't make it
ridiculous.
Up.
Absolutely ridiculous. Listen, I don't think half an hour's enough time for you, Richard. But listen, great to see you. We'll see you same time next Friday. Have a good weekend.
And
hopefully. I think a lot of people are going to be doing a lot of things that they want to do this weekend. That's my sense.
Sunbathing and watching football.
Bit of sunbathing, bit of watching football, bit of booing, and no taking the knee at all at any time.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Right now, though, we're going to talk to Dr. Lawrence Gillis, GP at Same Day Doctor, because guess what? The news that you didn't want to hear, more than 5 million people are now on waiting lists for hospital treatment, with some forced to wait more than 2 years. These are new statistics, right? Because the last time we looked, it was 4.5 million. So it's now, not only is it now a problem to try and see the right people in the NHS, it's now going up at a rate of knots. So that's 500,000, I think, in probably more than 3 or 4 weeks. Dr. Lawrence, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. This is not a milestone that anyone would wish to celebrate, really, is it?
No, but it's a consequence, obviously, of the pandemic where, you know, the NHS was focusing almost entirely on COVID and everything else got put on the back burner. And now they're trying to restart and realising that there's a huge backlog. Now, this is compounded by several factors. We've got a tired, exhausted and demoralised workforce, plus the fact that, you know, patients have been getting very sick. But a lot of the procedures that COVID brought in are still in place. So, for example, one of my staff had to have a cataract operation and she had to have a COVID swab and then isolate for 2 days with her family until she went into the hospital to have the operation. And that sort of thing is going on all over the country. I saw someone on Twitter saying she had to have an operation, but in a different area. So she couldn't have a COVID swab in her area. She had to drive 2 hours to another area to have a COVID swab so she could have an operation done in an NHS hospital. And look, the NHS is beset by bureaucracy at the best of times or the worst of times. This has just added another layer. And unfortunately, it's going to be a while before anyone thinks about relaxing those sorts of rules. So it's just adding to the problem.
Yeah, but why though, Lawrence? I mean, this is the problem. You know, the last time I think you and I spoke about this, it was 4.5 million. And I think that was just last month. So it's now gone up by another 500,000. And I don't really understand why, because at the point of sale, if you like, you know, the NHS is less busy now than it was for most of the last 12 months. So surely they should be catching up with all of these appointments, shouldn't they?
At one level, it's less busy with COVID. But you see, in defence of the GPs who have been on the receiving end of quite a lot of criticism, what GPs tell me is that the demand is actually very high. Bear in mind, people have been stuck at home. They can't go on holiday. They haven't been able to go out for a long time. They haven't got much to think about themselves and their health. And actually, what my understanding is, at all levels, demand on the healthcare is actually higher than ever, because people are thinking about their bodies, they're thinking about their health in a way they weren't before.
Yeah, but any other business, Lawrence, which was in this kind of situation, when demand is high, you pivot around and you make sure that you can cope with that demand. Otherwise, the business doesn't work. And I'm afraid we've now had years and years and years of being told, oh, you know, there's another crisis coming this winter. We haven't got enough beds. We haven't got enough nurses. We haven't got enough doctors. You know, who's fixing it? Nobody.
The problem is, Mike, when you talk about the health service, people say, well, there's only two ways of running healthcare, our way and the American way, which is quite simply not true.
Well, of course it's not.
And I've been saying this for 30 years. The NHS, free at the point of use, is not going to change in my lifetime.
Right. That's also a shibboleth, because it's not free at the point of use, because you and I pay for it, thanks.
Well, everyone pays for it. And you see that...
Well, not everyone.
Everyone who pays tax pays for it. You pay VAT, you're paying a tax. So every time you buy something, in a sense, you're paying VAT. We've never had a grown-up discussion about how best to run the health service. And there's no doubt whatsoever that having something that's free at the point of use increases demand. Now, every day I see people who make demands on me who fundamentally have got not much wrong with them. Mm. And that is a huge waste of resources. And that happens all over the health service. You're going to pull in people, who could go elsewhere, get other treatment to the health service. Making it totally free just increases access. And we need to have a grown-up discussion with appropriate safeguards. I don't want anyone to suffer. I don't want anyone to miss out on treatment. But it's not sensible. My favorite example of that is when the prescription charge was 50p per item, about half prescriptions were dispensed free of charge. Mm. Now it's about £7 per item. Over 90% of prescriptions are dispensed free of charge.
Yeah.
You tell me why, Mike. That is widespread fraud. Mm. And so, for example, lots of people go on social media and say, don't go to your GP, go to the pharmacist.
Yeah.
Patients work out, you go to the pharmacist, you've got to pay for things over the counter. Yeah. Whereas you go to the GP,
surely it's a very simple solution, Lawrence, isn't it? You just tell the GPs to stop prescribing things which can be bought over the counter. Because I hear these stories all the time where people are getting prescribed things like Calpol, because, they can. But they shouldn't be prescribing Calpol when you go buy it.
Yeah, when I started off as an NHS GP, people would come in for cotton wool and elastic stockings, which they could buy.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's a lot of grey areas. You take a drug like omeprazole, a stomach drug, which is prescription, but it's available over the counter in a different strength. There are a lot of things of that area, and there are a lot of things that you can buy over the counter instead of a different prescription drug. So it's very hard to lay down a hard and fast rule. But I think the principle there is that, the general public are very savvy about these things. They know that the NHS is free to them at the time they use it. So they're not going to use alternative methods, and they are going to make demands. Now, I feel sorry for people who need hip surgery or knee surgery if they're in a lot of pain. I'm not saying they have a choice. But overall, the health service is overloaded.
Nobody's doing anything about it, Lawrence. I mean, it's been overloaded over time, over years, continually. But yet nobody seems to be able to make a difference to changing the way it's done so that it doesn't get overloaded.
Yeah, and pouring more money into it isn't going to help.
No,
either.
That's not the answer.
We're overloaded, with bureaucracy, with paperwork, with staff shortages, with staff leaving. No one's going to make a radical change, but we need to start by making small changes. See, I would have done, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would have started with the prescription charge. I would have done away with most of the exemptions, but again, not penalise very severely ill. Making people realise that at all levels, healthcare needs to be paid for because it's an expensive item.
Well, one of the things I've always been in favour of is charging people £5 to go to see the GP. Because if they are going there for quite nebulous reasons sometimes, all of that will stop and people will stop going when they don't really need to go. And they won't have any harm. It won't harm the general state of the nation, but it will reduce quite substantially the numbers of people taking up time at the GP surgery every day.
You're quite right, Mike. And that would definitely work. It would definitely reduce demand. And you can introduce it at some levels in accidents and emergency as well. Obviously, not if you've been in a car accident, but for other levels of things.
Yeah.
The argument is that most people can afford £5. And if you can't, then you can have a reimbursement system. I know it's bureaucratic, or a stamp-based system.
No, I don't think you can. I think as soon as you introduce that, then all sorts of people start claiming it back, and all sorts of people start claiming exemptions, and then you're back to square one. I think you just go, sorry, it's £5. I don't care if you haven't got any money. You better go borrow it from somebody. I'm sure you can find somebody to borrow £5 from to buy a packet of fags.
Yeah, as long as some of the gutter press don't come up with, you know, old lady dies because she couldn't have £5. I mean, that, you know, that's going to happen.
But you mean the Daily Mirror?
Whichever.
When
one.
You say the gutter press, I'm not having that sort of talk on my show. Disgraceful.
One that will tear up live on air, I would imagine. But
yes, that would be another possibility. Yes, very, very true. But I just want something to be done about it. I just want them to fix it. I just, you know, I know what's going to happen. We're going to get into like October, November, December, yeah. And it's going to be another attack on the Tories for not sorting out the health service. There's going to be another winter crisis looming. There's going to be no more beds. There's going to be a massive flu epidemic. You know, we might get COVID back. But it's the same old story. It's like being in some kind of warped time warp.
It's going to go on. You know, health shouldn't be a sacred cow. After all, we pay for housing, we pay for electricity, we pay for food.
Yeah.
None of those things are provided free. They're all essential things. We've just got into this habit now that healthcare is free. And people say to me, they use that word free without any realization of how expensive healthcare is and how actually we're all paying for it.
Mm, exactly
and
right.
Morally, you see, sometimes I'm made to feel inferior because I work in the private sector. But I do point out, you know, doctors that work in the NHS are not volunteers. They're being paid.
Yeah. Also, an awful lot of them are working in the private sector as well.
Yeah. And if the doctors are being paid and the patients are paying via tax, then it's exactly the same. It's just the money is taking a more circuitous route to go from the patient to the doctor. And it's a very inefficient route. As well, so I would agree with you, Mike. But you know, we can fly that flag, but no one's ever going to pick it up because you know I've spoken to politicians about it. They know it is electoral suicide to charge people to see a doctor, and that's why it will never happen.
Absolutely ridiculous, but very good to talk to you as ever. Dr. Lawrence Girl is their GP at Same Day a Doctor. There is something wrong, very wrong, at the heart of the NHS. I've been saying it for a long time. It is by no means an organisation which is run by heroes. It is not an organisation which deserves to be applauded every 5 minutes. You know, I heard a guest on Julie Hartley Brewer's show just before I took over calling for the amazing NHS. Well, it's not amazing. There are some things that it does rather well, but most of what it does rather badly, I'm afraid. And I'm sorry if that upsets anybody that works in the NHS, but it ain't working and somebody needs to get to grips with it and fix it. Because every single bleeding year, they say the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. But nobody does anything. If you were running a company and that was the case, you'd be fired straight out the window from the 17th floor right here. If every single year I went to my boss and said the same thing about why the business didn't work, he'd go, well, fix it then. What are you doing? Why are you wasting everybody's time? That, ladies and gentlemen, is the NHS, I'm afraid.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The wokery goes on and on and on. I mean, if it's not Oxford Dons complaining about the fact that, you know, they want the Cecil Rhodes statue to be taken down or else they're going to go on strike, if it's not the England football players taking the knee, if it's not the ECB kicking out young cricketers because of things they said back when they were teenagers. Now, today, we've got some people moaning and groaning on about the fact that they don't like the word empire is part of the MBE, CBE business of various awards that were given out by the Queen in the birthday honours list, awards given out by the Prime Minister in his or her New Year's honours list. I mean, the list of idiocy in this country just goes on and on and on. What we're putting up with today is a bunch of people who say, oh no, we want to change the word empire because of obviously it has connotations that don't in any way agree with us. Instead, we want to change it to excellence. Well, there's 100 of them, right? They've been recipients of various honours. I'm looking for a list of names before I can, so that I can name and shame them, which I haven't got yet, but I will try and get. They basically want to change DBE, KBE, CBE, OBE and MBE into excellence instead of empire. Let's talk to Emma Webb, whose name also begins with E, to ask her what she makes of it all. Emma, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
What an absolutely ridiculous I mean, I've seen some ludicrous claims this week and this month and this year. This, I think, may top them all.
There's a lot that can be said about this, but I think one of them has to be that the word excellence is a very naff word.
Because anything that's called like a centre of excellence, you know, is going to be absolute rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so naff and modern in the worst possible way. But I think that one of the things, you know, to be said about this is the history of the OBE, because the order was set up by King George V after the first, well, during the First World War in 1917, with the intention to give these awards, these orders to people from all across the empire, from India, from right. the dominions, which then became the Commonwealth, including to people who were the rulers, you know, rulers in India who were sort of non-combatants during the First World War, including Indians themselves, so not just British. Mm. And I think the point that was made there just during the break in the news from someone who was criticizing this is that, you know, this is part of our history. And I don't think it's true that one of the critics of it being called Order of the Empire, one of the people who has an OBE, has said that this romanticizes and is a kind of nostalgia for empire. Mm. I don't think that's true. It's called Order of the British Empire because that is its historical origin.
That's when it was
origin.
Set up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. I mean,
that's
and,
like saying the World Cup shouldn't be called the Jules Rimet Trophy any longer because Jules Rimet isn't alive anymore. Well, it's still called the Jules Rimet Trophy.
Yeah, and it's important to remember as well that that country that had empire is the country that we are today. And in 1917, I think we also have to talk about this sort of conflation between empire and slavery because as the historian Giles Udy pointed out, after we abolished slavery, we became what was known as a sort of anti-slavery state. It was actually the British Empire that helped to put down slavery all across the world. And without that, probably slavery would have gone on for a lot longer. I mean, it still goes on today. So by 1917, we'd already been working throughout the world with the Royal Navy to abolish slavery worldwide. And so I think that, you know, some of this is, you know, slightly nuanced. We have to actually look at what the history of it is, but I think the concern is that people who criticise this are inevitably going to be called apologists for empire and slavery, which certainly isn't the case.
Well, that's right. And also, people who talk about these terms, these things in these terms and about the history of this country, you would think that Britain somehow was the only country that had any kind of interaction with the slave trade, which clearly is completely and utterly misguided, because every country did at that time, right?
Yeah, it's not surprising, actually, that this has, you know, become a campaign now. This conversation has actually been going on for a very long time. Back in 2004, one of the Commons committees actually recommended that the Order of the British Empire be phased out because of those associations with empire. And interestingly, the same committee also recommended that we change the word commander to companion.
Yes.
So it's not surprising that this has been a debate that's been going on for a long time. And it's always been something that has kind of been involved in political disputes. I don't know if anybody remembers that John Lennon actually handed back his his OBE or MBE even as a part of his peace protests.
Well, I mean, I have more time for people to do that. George the poet, whose real name is Benjamin Zephaniah, he rejected an OBE in 2003 because he said that he didn't really want to have it because of its association with the empire and its history of slavery. I have much more respect for somebody who does that rather than these people who've taken the honour and then suddenly realised, oh my God, you know, look me, it's 2021. I better say I don't want this being called the same thing as it was called when I was given it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something, you know, quite noble actually in handing something back as part of a protest. But I think that the issue really, and I think many people will be, you know, completely fatigued by all of this continuous attempts to change names, to edit things. I think people are just so tired of this now.
Yeah.
That it's not really going to make the point that I think they want it to make. So if you mentioned taking the knee earlier, there have been some footballers, and including football clubs, who have said that they're not going to take the knee anymore because they feel that it's no longer having the effect that they intended it to have.
Right.
And I think that is the case also with changing the name in this instance, because the Cabinet Office has said that they've been making efforts and will continue to make efforts to have the honours list as diverse as possible. And I'm not sure that changing the name of it to Order of Excellence, which sounds pretty naff.
Yeah.
And therefore also effacing the historical origins of that, which, you know, the historical origins, as I say, were to give awards to people all around the Commonwealth for their service during, sorry, all around the Empire. But some of those countries are now the Commonwealth and can still take part in the order, in the honours list. That was intended, you know, to give those honours to people all around the world for their service during the Second World War in non-combatant roles.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, we need to have a more sort of sensible approach to our history. I'm not sure that this is the way to do it. I don't think it's going to make the honours list more diverse.
Well, rewriting history is not really the right thing to do, is it? It's not really the way to go. History is history. Whether you like it or not is another matter, but you can't just pretend that it should be changed in order to appease something that you now have just dreamed up. Because there's a certain arrogance to it, I think, as well, where you've been given an honour by an organisation, i.e., I suppose, the Queen, but you'd like to change the name of it in the same way that the students in Oxford want to remove the picture of the Queen because they don't think it's welcoming enough. Or, you know, the Dons want to go on strike because they want demanding that a statue be removed. You know, and it's all become very me, me, me. You know, look at me. I need to get virtue signalling going and I need to get something done and I need to get something removed or something taken away or something taken out or something added in. It's like, why don't you just sit there, shut up and accept the way the world is around you?
It doesn't change the origin either of the OBE. The origin of the OBE will always be the Order of the British Empire.
Right.
That's where it came from. That's the reason why the Commonwealth countries can continue to participate in it. And the association will continue regardless of how you change the name.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a list here of all the people who have signed this letter, right? And I can honestly say I haven't heard of any of them. I don't know who they are. I really don't know why they've got these MBEs and CBEs and OBEs. And I couldn't really care less. I just think they are completely and utterly, you know, in danger of disappearing up their own backsides.
Well, you know, they're entitled to their protest, but I think we need to be able to criticise them without being called apologists for empire and slavery.
Well, how about you just give it back? You know, do your John Lennon and just go, oh, I'm terribly sorry, I don't agree with this anymore because it represents something that I fear I should not be in receipt of. So thanks very much. Have it back. Why not do that?
Well, quite. That might have more of an effect than insisting on changing the name. And also, you know, it's 100 people have signed this. How many people living today have received one of these honours, either OBE or MBE or otherwise? So I'm not sure actually, you know, how large a proportion they are of people who have received it. There may be people who have the honour, who want to keep it as Order of the British Empire, not because of some nostalgia for empire, but just because they are proud of the historical roots of that being sort of established by King George V, and they don't want that to be changed. So I'm not sure that they should be able to change the name of these honours for everybody else as well.
No, exactly. And also because some people don't like it. You know, the people I know personally who have been given these honours are very proud of them. You know, I've got a friend of mine who got one for his charitable works in the music business. I've got another guy who's a famous producer who got one as well for his work in the music business. You know, people are really proud of getting an award like this. I mean, I personally, as I was saying to Julia earlier, wouldn't really want one. I couldn't really care less if I get one. And as she said, any journalist that gets one, I think, has been proven to not be doing their job very well. Because, you know, I don't wish to be recognised by, you know, somebody who tells me I'm doing a good job. But, you know, I'll tell you whether I'm doing a good job or not. You know, but I just think, you know, a lot of people have got a lot of pleasure out of these, especially since they opened it up to ordinary people like sort of lollipop women and lollipop men, teachers, you know, people that do good works in society. And it's kind of, it leaves a very bad taste in the mouth, I think. It's more sort of middle class woke nonsense to me.
Yeah, it severs the link with the sort of historical roots of it that I think make people feel proud. And they're not proud because of the empire aspect of it. They're proud, like I said, because, you know, it was established after the Second World War. Well, during the Second World War in 1917. Mm. And I think that people, you know, they feel a sort of connection to all of the people who have come before them from that point, who served during that time until the present, and severing the link or attempting to sever the link by changing the name. I'm not actually convinced that it would sever the link. I think people would continue to just still think of it as Order of the British Empire. But I do think that would somehow, you know, for some people that might cheapen the title.
Well, that's right. But also, you know, what's wrong with these people who sort of stagger about all day wondering about how terrible everything used to be when Britain ruled the waves and how embarrassed they all are about it? Nobody really who is in any way normal thinks about it. Nobody really worries about it. You know, you look around, you see St. Paul's Cathedral, you think, what a wonderful looking church. You don't think, you know, was Christopher Wren a paedophile? You know, honestly, you know, but it's almost like that now.
It's a very, very unhealthy way of, you know, interacting with history and, you know, as you say, buildings and historical figures and people even in the present as well. I think people will be feeling really genuinely fatigued by the constant attempt to try and edit things in light of, you know, how we're what our current values are and how we're currently thinking about, you know, history and so on. Because, you know, in 5 years' time, I'm sure we'll be on another moral panic about, you know, something else.
Oh, God. I'm hoping in 5 years' time we'll have forgotten about all this madness and we'll have actually returned to some form of normal activity where we can all go out, have a good time, you know, make outrageous statements and get into good arguments and generally have a relatively large amount of fun.
Well, they're not exactly the sort of people that you would want to go to a party with, are they?
No. In fact, yeah, I'm going to keep this list of names with me, actually, at all times, just in case I ever run into any of them and immediately leave the room if they happen to be there.
You know, I think that they're entitled to their protest, but ultimately I think we should be really very proud of the fact that you mentioned, you know, Britannia ruling the waves, that it was because Britannia ruled the waves that we were able to not only abolish slavery, but then to abolish it all around the world and to suppress slavery, you know, across the entire globe. And so I think that we need to have a more sort of historically accurate understanding of the relationship between empire and slavery, because ultimately for the final years of the British Empire, you know, all the way up until, you know, our present monarch, there were lots of things that we can be proud of, also lots of things that we should be critical of, and, you know, it's not as straightforward as just saying that because it has empire in its name that that is somehow it is somehow nostalgia for a period where we were engaged in slavery. And I think it's just not a historically accurate understanding of the origins of the OBE.
No, exactly right. And it's also bad news, I think, is it not, for Empire Biscuits? I presume they'll have to change the name of those at some point.
Well, I'm sure that Imperial College London will be sweating.
Well, I mean, how the hell are they still called Imperial College? I mean, I don't get that either, but that's another story. Emma, good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Emma Webb, they're giving us her view on this nonsense, the latest nonsense with the Woke Brigade. 100 people who I've never heard of saying that they don't like the fact that they've been given an award that might have the name Empire associated with it. Get a life, for God's sake, people.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's Friday, it's 12:48, and it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Very high levels of compliance today. Very high. Excellent. Bit of dancing going on. I thought I was banned. Oh, you're not allowed to dance, are you, under the current COVID restrictions?
Well, I mean, you know more than I do.
Well, I mean, I think you're not allowed to dance in a pub.
No.
But it's all right here.
Yeah. Vertical drinking, that kind of thing.
That sort of thing, yes. Yeah. Vertical anything, in fact. It's all got to be horizontal.
Well,
you've got to be careful how you do that, obviously.
Absolutely. Well,
nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Missed you yesterday.
Yes, I know.
You missed the eclipse.
I know.
It was a great day. Very exciting.
Yes. Oh.
And the wine tasting.
Yeah. Although, was it nice wine?
It was, actually.
Okay.
Although Rob Rinder didn't like the first one. He said it was horrible.
Oh.
Which wasn't quite, I think, what Helena was looking for of a recommendation.
Oh, gosh. Well,
but I mean, might be doing the same next week. We might be doing the same on the old balcony next week.
Lovely.
That's
be there.
That's the plan.
I'll be there.
Good stuff.
Well, cue the Perrier Awards.
Yes, absolutely right.
So, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Thank you very much.
This is where we look back on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham and choose our favourite moment.
Excellent.
So, following tradition, and anyone who's watching or, well, listening, get yourselves onto YouTube because you need to see these ones.
Right.
So, following tradition, the first Perrier Award goes to you, Mr. Graham, for missing the cue of the week.
Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
I think we.
Now, when you say missing the cue, do you instead mean somebody not putting the microphone fader up? Is that what you mean?
I mean, as soon as it's straight on your then you, away we go.
Yes. Well, I felt that somehow I was speaking into the ether because right. I couldn't hear myself. And I thought, I'm not on yet, am I?
Oh, I see.
That was the kind of confusion.
Well, I think...
But I'm not blaming anyone.
No.
Obviously.
No, not pointing any fingers.
No. Certainly not, Mark.
Okay, so basically, these...
He didn't know whether I could hear him. That was the problem.
Well, I wasn't allowed to mention his name last week, and now you've
really?
Just dropped
Well, you know, times change. Things move on.
You make rules up as you go
along. Of course.
Along.
Of course. How do you think I got here? Told him I could do radio long before I could.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're smashing it now.
I am. Now I can do it. It's true.
So this next one, basically, if I didn't put it in, I feel like it would have got slipped in anyway.
Okay.
So earlier in the week, Conservative MP Deanna Davison joined us in the studio.
Yes.
Now, there's a very slim window for, you know, if a guest kind of comes into the studio and they want some water.
Mm.
So basically, this is very much a clear example of not making it back in time. This next Perry Award goes to me. Another visual for the appearance
I remember this
of the
one,
week.
Actually. Yeah.
Yes.
And they were all there at the gate shouting, yelling, being really yeah. abusive, really nasty. And you think, it's the poor girl's first day in Parliament.
Yeah, really.
Come on, let's give her a chance.
Yeah,
go.
There she is. Yeah, you should have been kneeling. You should have been yes. crawling along the floor, shouldn't you?
Well, I know. And Adam was like, so let's test your endurance skills
yes.
on this one.
It's not easy to crawl while holding a glass of water.
No, it
it's
isn't.
It's quite difficult, I
yes.
imagine. Anyway, well done for getting yourself
Thank
on
you.
Camera.
Thank you. Yes, I thought so. Well, so the Thursday Club obviously took a trip outside on the terrace in the sunshine. Now, behind the scenes, obviously, set up is kind of quite difficult sometimes, especially when the camera's rolling.
I don't know anything about that.
No, because the thing is, normally we do it so well that you just don't even notice.
That's true.
However, producer Adam gets a Perrier Award this week for the Inconspicuous Award of the Week.
This is it.
One like for you.
Thank you very much.
So, Vino Verde from, let's do this one.
This is Hungarian.
There he is.
This is Portuguese. This is the famous,
you're all on it
very
this
light, kind of spritzy.
I love
wine
the fact he thinks we can't see
him.
He's gone around the back.
Hiding behind you.
Yeah, that's
Adam.
Fine.
Yeah.
If I go behind them, they won't see me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, over to the breakfast show, where Julia
yes.
gets the mispronunciation of the week.
There's going to be a performance by the local sea shanty group. Oh, God, can you pronounce this for me? Duhag Aur, is that right?
I don't know, actually.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's not just me.
Yes.
She also can't pronounce sea shanty.
Sea
shanty.
Sea shanty.
Sea shanty. That's not how you say shanty. It's not shanty.
It's shanté.
It's no. Shanty. Well, it could be shanté. Yeah, it's definitely not shanty.
Shanty.
Definitely not that.
Oh, well, definitely
That's
not
a very hyacinth bouquet moment, that, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
Like piano.
I used to know someone who called hummus humus.
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 I think I've called it that once when when I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, and it's like quinoa as well, like quinoa.
Quinoa. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, these things are sent to try as much.
No, indeed. I've never tasted that, by the way. I don't plan to.
No, I tried
don't
to cook
like
it the other day.
Did
and
you?
It, yeah.
How do you cook it?
I mean, I wouldn't take.
Is it like barley?
Advice.
Is you cook it sort of like barley? Boil it.
It's kind of like a rice
like
thing,
porridge.
But then it ended up being not great. No.
You should probably plaster your walls with it.
Yeah, fill it in and sand
yeah,
it down.
Exactly.
Oh God.
Quinoa. Anyway, come on, don't start laughing.
So,
you won't stop if
No,
you start.
Absolutely. We're running out of time. So,
yes.
Ian Collins gets an award for the innuendo of the week.
Okay.
I said, no, it's not that. There's nothing wrong
no.
with that.
There's,
I said, there's
why
something
did they
wrong.
Not know that they
then
were
the guy
down.
On the other end of the phone, he went, no, you're right, because I can't get it up either.
Yes, I thought of that immediately when he said it.
Yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Very
I think you're, that was the suggestion from yourself, that one, Mike.
It was.
So, Rob Rindo was in the hot seat for Ian Collins
yes.
this week. Rob and yourself were talking about being nervous on air. This is a Perry Award for the analogy of the week.
Just like you're smooth on top, but like you're like a duck's feet underneath the water.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I didn't know
smooth
me that well.
On top.
Duck's feet. Hey, some people eat those, you know.
Well, some people, yes.
They're popular in China, duck's feet.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the thing
very
is...
chewy, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah, a bit rubbery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fancy it.
No. Well, fair enough. Another one for Rob Brinder
yes.
for forgetting his own name.
Good.
I'm Ron... I forgot my name for a second. It was all the swearing. It was also because I've got my mobile phone in my hand, which makes people a bit thick from time to time.
Very good. Everybody's done that, haven't they?
Absolutely.
Forget your own name.
Absolutely.
Super.
So finally, a late addition from yourself with your chat with Richard this morning. Mm. You get another award for the impression of the week.
I mean, unless you're some kind of virtue signaling Guardian reader, well, you're not going to go, oh, isn't it great? We're giving away all our vaccines all around the world. I like that one.
Yeah. I thought you might do.
Very good.
Well,
thank you very much.
No, thank you.
That was good. Very good.
It was very good indeed.
Hardly any mistakes at all, really.
Yes.
In fact, all the mistakes were from your side.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just to point that out.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. Off you go then.
Well, I was just waiting,
what are you waiting for
Rob Rinder to come
back. He can come in and you can go out. It's not a problem. You know.
Okay.
But thank you very much
indeed.
That's
all for the Perry Awards. There will be more next week.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.